Blog Talk Radio.
Jungle bitch. I got some fun for you. Got an interesting show today. I feel like it's, I don't know, it's kind of a sharp pivot away from yesterday. Yesterday we had to discuss Hillary Clinton's Wall Street transcripts. We had to discuss Donald Trump saying on tape he's basically a serial sexual assaulter. We had to do the entire debate breakdown. Today we have clash, man. There's a giant clash inside the GOP. You have Paul Ryan saying, I don't know about this Trump thing anymore. Then we have some more stuff from the Podesta leaks. But we also have Pat Robertson, Alex Jones. We, mix it up a little bit, have some more fun. And, oh boy, the first story I'll do here, the leaks, man, there's more tapes. There's allegedly, I should say, more tapes. And that could be really, really bad for Donald Trump. So let's get started here and have a little conversation about that up front. So recently we learned that there were tapes of Donald Trump talking to Billy Bush on the Access Hollywood bus, where Trump basically admits he's a serial sexual assaulter. He says, I don't wait for permission, effectively. Let me have some Tic Tac, because sometimes I just start kissing beautiful women. I mean, it's like a magnet. I just start kissing them. I don't even ask. I don't even wait. So I kiss them, and sometimes I grab their pussy. It's what I do. So he took a hit in the polls after that in the debate. That was a big, big issue that they spoke about. Well, people are saying that could just be the tip of the iceberg. So there are some reports now that when he worked on The Apprentice, there are a lot of tapes of what they were saying when they were off air, and it ain't pretty. So there's some transcripts, but there's also some tapes, some audio, some more audio. And we have a really weird situation because the head of the network endorsed Donald Trump. He allegedly threatened a lawsuit against anybody who leaks those tapes. And then the head of the network again came out and said, no, I didn't say I would sue anybody who releases the tapes. I don't know what you guys mean. We can't release them for, I don't know, other reasons, legal reasons. We can't. We just can't release them. Well, guess what? We're already having some cracks here, and some leaks are slipping through. So the first story isn't anywhere near as explosive as the one with Access Hollywood, but it's him basically talking about one of the female contestants and ironically going after her skin and saying, look, I have to just tell you, her skin is terrible. Her skin is horrible. It's a mess. Disaster. Sad. Funny coming from Donald Trump, because of course he's the orange man. He's the orange man who somehow still has pale white right underneath his eyes. He's basically a raccoon. So, but he's complaining about somebody else's skin. Now, again, that's just the first leak, and this was a transcript alone. It wasn't the audio, but there's more out there. I mean, there are rumors floating around now that it could be as bad as him saying the N-word. Now, I don't know. I really don't know, and maybe that's just something that somebody made up. It could very well be that. But do I think that there are other things on those tapes that would really be it? Yeah, I do think he probably said some things in private, if the Access Hollywood example is any indication, where everybody's like, okay, we're done here. Next. So we'll see. Look, I said from the beginning you can't run a PC outrage-based campaign against Donald Trump. It's not going to work. And I still believe that to this day. Here's the thing. That was not PC outrage. The Access Hollywood tapes where, he basically admits, yeah, I do sexual assault. And then he says, well, it's locker room talk. But if you actually did the things that you say you did on the tape, well, then that's sexual assault. So Hillary Clinton already had a fairly solid lead going into the debate and before these tapes. After the tapes and after the debate, now you look at the polls, and it's a very, very solid Hillary Clinton lead. I believe it's 5 to 6 points on average. On average, that is a solid lead. I wouldn't go as far as say the election is over yet, if more tapes release, it might be. But 5 to 6 points is solid. I mean, in all seriousness, though, if it was anybody else running against Donald Trump, any other Democrat, I think it already would be over. I think if it was Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, it'd be a fucking 20-point lead. I'm not kidding. A 20-point lead on average. Hillary Clinton has so much dirt on her with the email scandal and with the corruption and with the horrible campaign strategy that she's only up 5 or 6 points. But, you know, Trump is running out of time. We're, you know, less than 30 days to the election. Think about that. It'll be hard, man. I don't think the clock's running out. I'll just leave it at that. I'm not going to go any further than that because if I go any further than that, I don't think it would be true. I'll just leave it at that, that he's running out of time and he's in trouble. These other tapes happen to leak where he is saying other things akin to what he said with Access Hollywood. Stick a fork in him. He's done. But we'll see. It's a little too soon to do the dance on the grave. People did that during the primary endlessly, and we know how that ended up. It's a slightly different case in the general election, but he's a bigger threat, and he was a bigger threat, and he is a bigger threat than people think he is. So we'll have to see how it unfolds. But boy, would the nation be in for another wild ride if more behind-the-scenes tapes leak from The Apprentice. And it looks like the only thing preventing that at the moment is the head of the network basically supporting Donald Trump, and he endorsed Donald Trump. So he's probably working behind the scenes to do everything he can to make sure they don't leak. We'll see. Now, actually, let me take a sip of my drink. I got a little bit of cotton mouth going on here. No, not because I smoked weed. If that was the case, I'd be curled up in the fetal position crying. I get paranoid when I smoke weed. For those of you who haven't listened to the show before, welcome. That's not my thing. All right, now let's talk about the gigantic split inside the Republican Party. It's growing and it's bad. Reports were out yesterday that GOP Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, has effectively pulled his support for Donald Trump. Now, he didn't officially say, okay, that's it, I unendorse him and I wash my hands of it and I'm moving on here. But there, you know, were things indicating that very, very heavily. He did everything but that. So, for example, he canceled all of his events campaigning with Trump. It's a little bit of a sign. He canceled all of Mike Pence's events with him. Even the VP is getting the boot. And according to sources close to him, he said that he's just going to focus on down-ballot races now. So that's his main thing. I'm just going to focus on the down-ballot races. I'm going to try to get those Republicans elected. As far as you guys go, we're kind of done here. I think there was also some funding pulled for certain ads in certain states. Oh, and they stopped with the Donald Trump Victory Fund, I think it's called. So it looks like they're pulling the chute. It looks like the Republican establishment gave it a shot, and then they're like, meh, okay, we're kind of done here. So Donald Trump, taking it in classic Donald Trump fashion, he fired back on Twitter, and he said, Paul Ryan should spend more time on balancing the budget, jobs, and illegal immigration and not waste his time on fighting the Republican nominee. Furthermore, this morning, or was it late last night? Yeah, I think it was late last night. Trump went on another tweet storm and he said, despite winning the second debate in a landslide, every poll, it is hard to do well when Paul Ryan and others give you zero support. Our very weak and ineffective leader, Paul Ryan, had a bad conference call where his members went wild at his disloyalty. Okay, now, by the way, of course, there's a factual error in there. He says he won according to every poll. No, he won according to every unscientific online poll. Now, I don't think that counts for nothing, but it certainly doesn't count for everything. And when you actually went to the scientific polls, Hillary won all of those, at least at this point. Now, more are going to come out later on, and maybe that'll be a different story then, and maybe it'll be more split. I don't know. But when he says I won according to every poll, that's just factually not true. So, look at what we're dealing with here. Paul Ryan pulling support, other top Republicans pulling their support. Here's what I don't get about this. You guys have heard me make this case a million times, but I'm going to make it a million more. Why is this the straw that broke the camel's back? Don't get me wrong. I get it's a big story. I spoke about it. I told you guys my take on it. I don't think it's PC outrage. I don't think it's something that's unworthy of intense media scrutiny and focus. The guy basically admitted that he does sexual assault. But think about the hierarchy and the priorities and the ranking here. So he said on Fox and Friends, let's kill civilians. We have to, quote, take out their families. That's terrorism. And this again, this is like a one level worse than anything Obama's done. And I don't want to, like, make it downplay what Obama's done and what the Democrats have done and the Republicans have done, where massive collateral damage. And I don't think they give a fuck about collateral damage. So if they take out one Taliban guy, maybe they'll kill 12 civilians. And they're like, okay, we're going to do what we're going to do, and that's it. And that's abhorrent. That's morally abhorrent. That's criminally negligent. That's horrific. And that's a very bad category of manslaughter, effectively. Trump goes one step further. He's like, no, if you give me a room of 12 civilians and no Taliban people, no Al-Qaeda people, nothing, I'm still going to take them out. That's the point. I want to do that. So he says, I want to kill civilians. GOP establishment's like, oh, I don't see anything really wrong with that. How many other examples? We should have taken the oil in Iraq. I mean, guys, that's lunacy. He advocated for committing war crimes on primetime TV during a debate. We should have just taken the oil. Tremendous, believe me. So let me get this straight. Do an offensive war, invade and occupy a country that did not attack us, and then steal their shit, and then turn around to the rest of the world and say, we're the world police. That's what we are. We care about altruism and human rights, even though we violated and did it all the time and just did it right now. Tremendous, believe me. Okay, why wasn't that? Why, when he said, I want to torture, quote, even if it doesn't work, why wasn't that enough to say we're done? Why wasn't, when he said the Geneva Convention is, quote, the problem? He wants to pull out of the Geneva Conventions. All Muslims from entering the U.S. That's like the definition of bigotry. 1.6 billion people. I don't know, you're all close enough to Al-Qaeda because you're Muslim, so I'm going to kick you out. I don't give a fuck if you're a Sufi Muslim. I don't give a fuck if you're a moderate Sunni. I don't give a fuck if you're Shia. You know, I don't give a fuck if you're Baha'i. It doesn't matter. I don't care. I don't care. I'm going to kick all of you out, and that's the end of the conversation. Are you an Ahmadiyya Muslim? All about peace? I don't care. You're all gone. All these different things. The GOP establishment. All right. We can deal with it. Yep, totally. No problem. The one thing, the straw that broke the camel's back, was when he said, sometimes I grab them by their pussy. Don't even ask. You know, somebody made a good point online to me. Forgive me, I forget who it was. But they said, no, you missed it, Kyle. Here's why they're finally pulling the chute on this one. Think about who the victims are in all the other instances you just brought up. Take out their families, torture, ban all Muslims. Who are the victims? They're not white people, and they're not white women. Well, all of a sudden, when you talk about, you know, potentially molesting / sexually assaulting white women, oh, you could be talking about my daughter. God, Don, we're only supposed to be assholes to brown people. God damn it. Why don't you get this? Possible. It's possible that's what's going through their mind. I mean, this was the thing that finally got them to say, okay, we have to back away here. And you think this is going to be easy? Like, I think Paul Ryan might have naively thought, like, oh, now everybody wants us to distance ourselves from him, so this will be the easy part where we're doing, like, okay, finally, we'll give in to what everybody wants and we'll distance ourselves from him. The Republican base is not happy about this. There's a video out there from yesterday of a Republican politician basically unendorsing Donald Trump at an event. I think that he thought everybody at the event, all Republicans, would be like, okay, good, yes, tremendous, good move. No, the opposite happened. People are booing him. People are booing him because he unendorsed Donald Trump. This idea of Paul Ryan and the GOP, elites of, well, I mean, come on, if we split with Trump, the people come with us, right? I don't know about that, buddy. I don't know about that. I think other elites will go with you. I do. I think the establishment people will go with you. Maybe the really wealthy Republicans on Wall Street will go with you. But in terms of, you know, average Joe Republican in Mississippi or Alabama, they kind of agree with Trump on TPP. You know, they kind of agree with Trump on his more populist rhetoric. They kind of agree with Trump when he lays his bigotry out there on the table, as opposed to you guys who like to code your bigotry. So they view this as you betraying him, you know, that you assume they're all going to come with me. Well, the evidence shows they're not all going to go with you. So the Republicans are in disarray. Don't get me wrong. You know, it's not like the Democrats aren't. I mean, the Bernie people, I think rightly, hate Hillary Clinton. But it looks like at this point there will be enough, I don't know how many, over 50%, maybe 60% or so, that are going to suck it up and vote for Hillary Clinton in the general. Whereas the split in the Republican Party seems real in the sense that there could be massive, massive down-ballot effects. They're doing this to try to – they're damned if they do, damned if they don't. Paul Ryan is damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. If he splits from Trump to try to save the down-ballot people could lose. If he doesn't split with Trump to try to save the down-ballot people, they could still lose that way. So they're really in trouble, as usually the Republicans are in elections that include a presidential election. Usually the Republicans do well in the midterms because the Democrats don't turn out, but in presidential elections recently, the Democrats have done well because there's just the demographics don't work out for the Republicans all that well. So they're in a pickle. Paul Ryan's in a pickle. There's no good answer for him. But morally, perhaps, the answer was to say, no, Trump from way back. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that's a de facto endorsement of Hillary because I don't like Hillary either, and I would have, you know, went to pains to say not her either, right, and just stayed out of it, essentially. But he didn't do that. There was some tepid support for Trump and happened for a while, and now finally they're saying enough's enough, but it ain't going to be smooth sailing, and there are going to be effects. And you're starting to see a real serious issue here within the Republican Party as a result of those recent leaked tapes. Okay. All right, now we have stuff on Hillary for you. A bunch of stuff from the emails. The leaked Podesta emails. We have another Hillary Clinton story for you from WikiLeaks' recent document dump. It's on what they plan to do with taxes for the rich. So The Intercept breaks it down here. American multinational corporations are currently stashing a staggering $2.4 trillion in profits, about 14% of the size of the entire U.S. economy, overseas. Multinationals are required by U.S. law to pay the statutory 35% tax on profits they earn anywhere on Earth, but the tax is not assessed until the profits are brought back to the U.S. This has allowed corporate America to essentially hold U.S. tax revenue hostage, refusing to pay its taxes until Americans become so desperate that they will cut a deal giving multinationals a special new tax rate. This strategy has already paid off once in 2004 when multinationals got Congress to let them bring back $312 billion in profits at a one-time rate of about 5%. The legislation required that the cash be used to hire Americans or conduct research and development. Corporations ignored these provisions and instead used the money to enrich their executives and stockholders while cutting U.S. jobs. All right, so what they're doing there is they're laying out the history of this, and they're showing you what the game is and how these multinational corporations say, yeah, I could bring the money back into the U.S. and pay my taxes like everybody else has to do, or not. Or I can use this giant legal loophole where I keep my money overseas and I basically say, I'm never going to bring it back until you give me a special tax rate. So not only are they holding the government hostage, they're holding you hostage. Because in the meantime, who picks up the slack when these giant corporations who are super rich dodge their taxes? You do. You do. They shift the tax burden onto you, middle-class workers who are busting your ass. So all the government is asking is that corporations be treated like anybody else. That's all they're asking. Okay, you guys are going to pay your taxes. The accountant paid his taxes. The construction worker paid his taxes. The teacher paid her taxes, so on and so forth. You got to pay your taxes. They go, no, we'll just keep the money overseas. And then you have to come begging to us to bring it back in when you're really desperate. And then maybe we'll consider it if you give us a special rate. And they did it in 2005 where it's, okay, just 5% is what it is. And they make up the bullshit provisions of, and you have to spend the money you bring back into the country on this, this, and this. The corporations go, sure, we'll do that. And then there's no provisions to enforce anything. So they just end up giving the money to the people at the top of the company. I mean, this is what people talk about when they say the system is rigged. Now, in step Hillary Clinton, and listen to this, quote, during an October 13th, 2014 speech to the Council of Insurance Agents and Brokers, Clinton told the audience that, quote, a number of business leaders have been talking to my husband and me about an idea that would allow the repatriation of the couple trillion dollars that are out there, and you would get a lower rate, a really low rate, if you were willing to invest a percentage in an infrastructure bank. So you understand the trick that's done there, right? Cut a deal with these businesses. And they'd say, okay, look, you bring the money back in the country. You know, we'll take whatever it happens to be, 3%, 4% of that, and put it in a infrastructure bank that will immediately go to fixing infrastructure. Now, on that alone, we're going to take that aspect of it. Won't use the percentage number, but we'll use the raw number to describe how much money is going to go into it. And we'll use this to sell the progressives and the liberals. Come on, guys, what are you complaining about? We just set up an infrastructure bank. We want to rebuild the country. We got billions of dollars more now. What are you talking about? You can't be against this. It'd be crazy to be against this. I mean, are you against infrastructure spending? I guess you're against infrastructure spending. So that's how they'd sell to the progressives. How would the Republicans sell it to, the conservatives? They'd say, guys, you know, we got a deal here. They're only paying 6% total, bitch. So, but, you know, this is... They get their special tax deal. They get to bring the money back in. We wash our hands of it and we move forward. She said, we give you a low rate, quote, a really low rate. What is that number? I don't know. It's open to interpretation. Bush did 5%. You thinking about 5%? And a certain percentage of that 5% goes to the infrastructure bank? But this is Clintonism 101. Always has been, always will be. For those of you who don't know, Bill Clinton ran his campaign in 1992 with this new thing called triangulation. Now, at the time, people viewed the Democrats as they're too far left. Now, I don't think that was true policy-wise, but people looked at them as too far left because they were still recovering from the 60s and the 70s and, you know, fucking hippies with the long hair and the no shirt and, let's do LSD, woo! So people were like, okay, too far left. Let's go to Reagan, button down. So Bill Clinton came along. The Democrats had gotten their clocks clean in all these different elections. Bill Clinton comes along. He's like, no, I got this shit. Grab the bull by the horns. I'm a new Democrat. That's what he said to people. I'm a new kind of Democrat. What I do is I triangulate. I'm above the fray, bro. Look, man, I'm so reasonable. Sometimes I agree with the Republicans. Sometimes I agree with the Democrats. And I'm just this, moderate centrist kind of character. Now, at that time in history, it was a brilliant strategy. But he governed that way too. And when you govern that way, you're a disaster. This is what neoliberalism is. When you govern that way, well, what are the results? You get NAFTA. You get welfare reform, which screwed over poor people. And the list goes on and on. You get deregulation, repeal of Glass-Steagall, which the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, which Bill Clinton signed, despite the recent attempt for people on the left to try to pretend that wasn't the case. That was the case. He did sign it. So this is the result of it. And now Hillary Clinton is that 2.0, where she says, no, it's cool. We're going to make a deal with you. Middle-class people, you have to pay all your taxes. It's not a question. You don't, we'll throw you in jail. You got to pay your taxes. 20%, 25%, how much you make, 80 grand a year, 70 grand a year, whatever it happens to be. You got to pay your taxes, period. These corporations stashed trillions of dollars overseas, with a T, trillion. They're going to give them a special deal to bring that money back in the country. No, you know how somebody would handle that if they actually gave a shit about the American people? They say this. Here's the deal. You bring that money back into the country this year, and you'll only have to pay what the rate is, 35%. If you bring it in this year, you will pay 35%, which is what you owe. I'll be kind to you. I won't penalize you for trying to play this game and hide the money from the U.S. government. I'm being really kind by saying that, aren't I? I mean, I could penalize the fuck out of you. You've been hiding that tax revenue. We know what you're doing. You're dodging your taxes, bitch. You're exploiting a loophole. Well, guess what? We're going to shut the loophole, but you have 1 year to bring that money back in the country, and you'll pay 35%. If you don't, starting next year, you'll pay 50%. Hey, like them apples. What are they going to do? They're going to fucking bring it back in immediately. Oh, shit, 35% is lower than 50%. Let's go. Code red, bitch. Let's go. But what do Clintons want to do? They want to do similar to Bush. You know, Bush was, hey, bring in 5%. I don't give a fuck what you do with the money. Say, hey, here are these provisions which we won't enforce about how you have to use it to create more jobs. Didn't happen. The Clintons will be slightly further to the left on the spectrum, bring in about the same amount, maybe 5%. If I'm being overly kind to them, maybe 10% when they're supposed to be paying 35% on it. And a little bit of that will go to an infrastructure bank, so aren't we so liberal? No, you're not. You're a neoliberal. The debate we're having is on an Overton window that's so far to the right where there is no left anymore. And this is why progressives are sick of you. This is why the base is having a hard time holding their nose and voting for you. It's because of what you do. It's not an irrational bias against you. People look at you and evaluate what you do, and they go, not good enough. Okay. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, more damning emails in the WikiLeaks documents. Buckle up. It's going to keep getting worse. All right, stay right there.
I think I'm Big Meech, Larry Hoover, whipping work, hallelujah, one nation, under God, real niggas getting money from the fucking star. I think I'm Big Meech, Larry Hoover, getting work, hallelujah, one nation, under God, real niggas getting money from the fucking star. My Rolls Royce, triple black, I'm Meechie Howden. Ballin' in the club, bottles like I'm Meechie Howden. Rose, that's my nickname. Cocaine running in my big vein. Self-made, you just affiliated. I built it ground up, you bought it renovated. Talking plenty capers, nothing's been authenticated. Funny, you claiming the same bitch that I'm penetrating. Hold the bottles up. Where my comrades, where the fucking felons, where my dog said, I got that Archie Bunker, and it's so white I just might charge a double. I think I'm Big Meech, Larry Hoover, whipping work, hallelujah, one nation, under God, real niggas getting money from the fucking star. I think I'm Big Meech, Larry Hoover, work. Hallelujah. One nation. Under God. Real niggas getting money from the fucking stars. motherfuckers mad at him, icy. Not so hard, make them come and date me. I think I'm getting niche. Look at my timepiece. It's been out of me here, 100 racks at least. Look at yourself, now look at me. You can't see a nigga, I'm what you used to be. Look at it this way, you niggas sideways. Always getting money, my nigga time pays. So fuck a nigga, I'm self-made. You a sucker nigga, I'm self-paid. It's for my broke nigga, it's for my rich nigga. Got 100 on the head of a snitch nigga. I think I'm Big Mitch, Larry Hoover, whipping work. Hallelujah, one nation, under God. Real niggas getting money from the fucking start. I think I'm Big Mitch, Larry Hoover, getting work. Hallelujah, one nation, under God. Real niggas getting money from the fucking start.
You're 36, hopefully you bleed a band. Words in them 36, O's in a kilogram. Blunt tip, armors like caviar. Wildin' out, fishtail and Subaru, rally car.
Fishtail
out the passenger, letting the automatic off. Hey, or that girl, I'll knock your mommy and your daddy off. Fuck around and knock the emblem on that carry off. Four shooters bugging out, blicking at your carry doors. And did I mention guns from Red Dead Redemption? 9 mils, 50 clip extension. Hope it's like the mattress in the hood. I'm flipping on it. And the money's like a chair. I'm sitting on it.
I think I'm Big Mitch. Larry Hoover. Whipping work. Hallelujah. One nation. Under God. Real niggas getting money from the fucking start. I think I'm Big Mitch. Larry Hoover. Getting work. Hallelujah, one nation, under God, real niggas getting money from the fucking stars.
Son of a bitch. All right, we're back, people. More of the email leaks for you. We have some more damning emails in the WikiLeaks documents from over the weekend. This is an exchange between New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, Neera Tanden of the Center for American Progress, and, of course, Hillary's campaign, and John Podesta's aides. So it's this big email with all these people in it. Now, the first thing sent is de Blasio sends a plan laying out progressive priorities moving forward. And Neera Tanden responded with this, quote, "Substantively, we have not supported $15 minimum wage. You will get a fair number of liberal economists who will say it will lose jobs. Most of the rest seems fine. Obviously, trade sticks out. Politically, we are not getting any pressure to join this from our end. I leave it to you guys to judge what that means for you, but I'm not sweating it." Man, these emails really expose that the DNC and the Democratic establishment insiders are exactly what we thought they were all along. I mean, they don't care about progressive priorities. Certainly Neera Tanden doesn't. I mean, look at what she said there. Well, look, we haven't supported $15. That's true. Hillary supported $12 minimum wage. And then she says, well, you know, it might cost jobs. And we don't agree with the trade part either, because obviously they're more pro-trade than what the actual Democratic base is. And then, look, we're not getting any pressure to join this, so effectively, why would we? Now, that should be noted that at that time, there was the Fight for 15 protest going on all around the country. Thousands of people marching in the streets. And Irtan is like, well, we're not getting any pressure on the $15 minimum wage. Okay, this shows that you have to force the party and drag the party left. They're not going to go willingly. This is a Democratic establishment insider. Like, I don't know, we're not feeling pressure on it, so what are we going to do? No. You can do what you want in terms of being on board with these priorities or not, but I'm not sweating it. Okay, so let me – actually, one more thing on that real fast before I continue here in the emails. When it comes to the minimum wage, I actually have a different idea than any of the ideas that have been floated. And so my whole thing is, well, it's obviously the case that in rural Wyoming, a living wage is there is wildly different than what a living wage is in New York City. So in rural Wyoming, I'm not kidding when I say it might be $8 an hour where that's a living wage. Whereas try to live on $8 an hour in New York City, it's just impossible. You can't. That's not a living wage. So my idea has always been, my favorite idea has been on the minimum wage, federal legislation that mandates a living wage in each individual state. And even if you go, you can even go more specific than that. And I know it gets really kooky and strange and hard, but you could even do it by county or something like that, where so it might be the case that if you go to rural Kentucky or Montana, that the living wage and what the minimum wage is $8 an hour. But in L.A. and in New York, it might be $23 an hour. So I'm in favor of both a higher minimum wage in many instances and a lower minimum wage. Whatever a living wage is in each individual place is what the minimum wage should be. That's always been my take on it. So I actually don't disagree. It's not a crazy thing for her to say and for other liberal economists to say, yeah, well, 15 might cause you know, job loss in certain places. Again, if you go to South Carolina in the country, they're going to be like, yeah, I run a fucking small sandwich shop that gets 12 customers a week. I can't afford to pay somebody $15 an hour. So that's actually true. That's actually true. But the thing is, the other ideas that it's connected to in the case of Neera Tanden is the problem. The fact that it's viewed that she's looking down on the progressive base and it's condescending to the progressive base and it's kind of letting everybody know, like, well, obviously we don't agree with the rabble. Like, we're above that. Okay, and it gets worse. So you ready for this? Clinton senior aide Jake Sullivan replied to this. So this is one of Clinton's senior aides here. Said, John Podesta and the Red Army want to support $15 an hour. One of Hillary Clinton's top aides saying, oh, you guys want $15 an hour? Fucking Red Army. Wait, more? Then Tanden said, and when you say Red Army, you mean the base of the Democratic Party, right? With a little smiley face. Just want to be clear here. They're joking around about the base of the Democratic Party being communist. Because that's how they view you. Did you support Bernie Sanders? You're just a fucking commie. Yeah, commie, irrational. You know, I want to pay everybody the exact same. You know, you want to pay the janitor and the CEO the same because you're crazy, kooky communist. State control of everything. That's not a thing. Like, that's a, what fucking year are you living in? You think this is 1953? No. If you listen to what Bernie Sanders and his people say, if you listen to what the base of the Democratic Party says, they're by far and away the most reasonable people in the country. Because what do they argue for? All they want is people to have a living wage, to have universal health care, like every other modern nation on the planet, and us to have universal education. All they want is equal opportunity. All they want is to stop invading everywhere on the planet. We have had 7 interventions under Obama, who's supposed to be a liberal Democrat. This is all they want, man. This is all they want. They just want you to regulate Wall Street. They just want you to have the rich pay their fair share, again, like any other modern nation on the planet. I mean, this is a social democratic movement more than anything else. In other words, it's a mix between socialism and capitalism. I mean, this is what Bernie Sanders wants. All we do is we look at Scandinavia and we go, well, that seems to be the best model because empirically it is when you go by the different categories and you go by the rankings from various studies across the planet. I mean, they say, oh, their quality of life is higher. They self-report being happier than anybody else. Their healthcare ranks better than ours. Their middle class income is better than ours. The list goes on and on, man. It goes on and on. But they mock that. They, oh, well, then you're just a fucking communist. If you don't like this cowboy corporatism that we have here where everybody gets fucked, well, you're just a commie. This is why we hate the DNC. This is why we hate the Democratic establishment, because you just clearly us versus you. It's clearly the Democratic base versus you. You pretend, you do kabuki theater and pretend to be on our side. We see right through it, man. Neera Tanden is the most obvious faux progressive on the planet. All she cares about is being an insider. All she cares about is being part of the establishment. She's part of that Hillary Clinton neoliberal circle to the point where, I mean, it's substantively we have not supported $15 an hour. I mean, economists say you'll lose jobs. Most of the rest seems fine. Trade sticks out, though. Politically, we're not getting any pressure to join this, so I don't know. You guys decide. So it's not about, like, they're not. Nobody's leading a movement among the Democratic establishment trying to get a better life for you. That's obviously not what it's about, because they're saying, well, we're not getting any pressure on that. Say, you know, you twist our arm enough, maybe we'll go to that position. But lead the movement, you know, lead the charge to try to make your life better and get substantive change, that's not what we're about. That's not what we're about. But don't you dare, you know, say that we're sellouts. Don't you dare say that what we're really about is, you know, accepting money from donors and then doing favors for those donors. Don't say that, even though that's exactly what we're about. Don't say that. Hey. We give you 18% change. The Republicans give you 0% change. Take your 18% and shut the fuck up. They don't get the hatred that's bubbling among the progressive base and the Democratic base and the liberal base. They don't get it. They don't get it because they're massively disconnected. Keep talking like this. Watch what happens. I'm giving you the warning, man. I'm Paul Revere here. The British are coming. This is how you created a monster like Donald Trump. Don't get me wrong. Some of it is just straight out bigotry and xenophobia and tapping into that ugly nerve among far-right conservatives in the U.S. Some of it is that. A lot of it is motherfuckers hurting from TPP. Well, we didn't have TPP yet. Motherfuckers hurting from NAFTA. Scared of TPP. Scared of losing their job and having it outsourced. And then they look at Hillary Clinton and they go, come on. Is anybody kidding? Really? Are we all supposed to believe she's not going to represent the elite? To the point where they'd even consider a fascist buffoon maniac over the establishment. All right, now... All right, you guys, how many more do I have of the leaks? I got 2 more of the leaks, and then we'll jump off when we got a bunch of other stuff to get to. But I got it. These stories are too good to pass up, man. They're just too good to pass up. WikiLeaks released John Podesta's emails. He's a top Democrat, and he outlined the DNC's strategy to boost Hillary Clinton in the primary. So let me give you one of the most interesting findings here, because I think it says something important about Democratic elites. So he outlines, our goals and strategy. Our hope is that the goal of a potential HRC campaign and the DNC would be one in the same. to make whomever the Republicans nominate unpalatable to a majority of the electorate, we have outlined strategies to obtain our goal. All right, now let me just pause there to say, well, this is only exactly what Bernie Sanders supporters said all along, and we were called conspiracy theorists. Oh, yeah, totally, yeah, the DNC is supporting Hillary Clinton. No, they're not. Are you kidding me? It's a, hello, we're in the primary, and they're going to support whoever the nominee is. So, like, they're hands off, and they're just letting them have at it in the debates, and they're not leaning in one direction or another direction. Crazy conspiracy theorist Bernie Sanders supporter. Look, how much evidence was there? They tried to fucking hide debates alongside massive, you know, sporting events. They tried to hide them on Saturday night. Some of them were on Saturday night. I mean, there was so much evidence that obviously they're trying to hide it because HRC already had the high name recognition, the celebrity status, and in polls she was doing better. Not as many people knew who Bernie Sanders was. So how would you get it so that people know Bernie Sanders? You got to have the debate. You got to have his name out there. So they tried to hide that. Just so many things, and we were scoffed at. But let me continue here because there's an even more important part of this, because we already knew that part of it and we've discussed it at length. But they say one of the things they want to do is force all Republican candidates to lock themselves into extreme conservative positions that will hurt them in a general election. Then they go on to say the Pied Piper candidates. There are two ways to approach the strategies mentioned above. The first is to use the field as a whole to inflict damage on itself, similar to what happened to Mitt Romney in 2012. The variety of candidates is a positive here, and many of the lesser-known can serve as a cudgel to move the more established candidates further to the right. In this scenario, we don't want to marginalize the more extreme candidates, but make them more Pied Piper candidates who actually represent the mainstream of the Republican Party. Pied Piper candidates include, but are not limited to, Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, Ben Carson. We need to be elevating the Pied Piper candidates so that they are leaders of the pack and tell the press to take them seriously. Okay, now, I think most outlets are misinterpreting this part of it, and they're portraying it as, oh my God, Hillary Clinton and the Democratic establishment, they are such evil geniuses that they propped up Donald Trump. Donald Trump won, and now they're getting the best-case scenario where they're running against Donald Trump. No. No. Read over it a few times. When you read over it a few times, it becomes very clear. What they're saying is, look, come on. These guys, Ben Carson, Ted Cruz, and Donald Trump, I mean, they can never win, and they're so extreme that we want to try to pump them up so that they use far-right rhetoric. They're viewed as like leaders, kind of like Herman Cain was the last time. And then they will push Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, Scott Walker. One of the people who are actually going to win, one of those to the right. And then in the general election, Hillary gets to pound away on the insane right-wing stuff that Scott Walker or Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio said during the primary season. That's what they're saying. In other words, do we take Ted Cruz, Ben Carson, and Donald Trump seriously? Do we think they're going to win the primary? Not in a million years. They're not going to win the primary. There's no way they're going to win the primary. Now, again, you might say, well, come on, everybody thought that. But that's not true. People who follow politics a lot were able to tell very early on, myself included, after just three events, a caucus and two primaries. What did I say? I said it'd be a minor miracle if Trump doesn't win. There are people who called it before me, because we go based off the evidence. We go based off the data. We know the Republican base. We know the mood in the country. Not from gut, but from reading so many different stories. So people who are well-educated on this stuff and follow it for a living, we know these assholes didn't see it coming. They're like, I mean, well, come on. It's going to be Jeb Bush. It's going to be Scott Walker. It's going to be Marco Rubio. It's going to be one of those guys, right? Right? Oh, shit. Donald Trump won. We didn't see that coming at all. We don't know what this is. So I think the biggest takeaway from this is, to this day, the Democratic establishment, the Democratic Party, they're out of touch, and they don't know what the fuck they're doing. Like, they always think they nail it with their strategy. Like, all right, Hillary, this is what you're going to do. You're going to try to run to the left in the primary, and then you're going to pivot to the right in the general, and then you're going to win that way. You're going to love it. Except what happened? Well, you ran to the left, kind of, not really, in the primary. You tried to, but obviously Bernie Sanders kicked your ass up and down the stage, which is why he went from nobody fucking knowing him to him almost winning and getting, what, 47% of the vote in the country? Then you pivot right in the general, and all your millennials leave you. She's like, okay, I got my base locked up. Anyway, let's run to the right. Oh, shit, where'd my base go? She lost 17 points in fucking 1 month among millennials because she's cuddling up to neocons and talking about how we got to have a strong backbone on foreign policy. So that model is destroyed. That model doesn't work anymore. It's a stupid model. In fact, you're doing as bad as you possibly can against a candidate who basically admitted I sexually assault people as of right now. But they think they're nailing it. They think they're nailing it. Just go by the playbook and then everything will work out. And don't worry, according to our calculations, we put it into the machine, and the establishment machine says it's going to be Scott Walker or Jeb Bush, and what we wanted to do is use Donald Trump and Ben Carson and Ted Cruz to push him to the right. But don't worry, they're not going to win. Those extreme candidates won't win. Oh, shit, they won? We did not see that coming. What is going on here? They don't know. They never know. By the way, these the same people who come up with this kind of strategy are the same people who say in political debates when actually trying to govern, go to the right, concede the Republicans. There's the same people that with Obama behind the scenes, like, okay, here's what we're going to do on health care. Not argue for our position. Wait, what? Yeah, so our position is single payer. We don't – fuck that. Not public option, we'll argue for that for like 3 seconds. If they don't agree, then just cave to individual mandate, which was their original idea. This is these people were the answers. Okay, run further right, guys. That's what we got to do. Running further right's the plan. All on board? Say aye. Aye? Okay, let's do it. So that's these people. And those are the same geniuses who were like, use Donald Trump, use Ted Cruz, use Ben Carson, push him to the right. Donald Trump won. And they also, they're profoundly unnuanced in their take on those people too. So with Trump, that like they never factored in and they didn't, you know, learn about the reality of him consistently hammering TPP. They didn't want to talk about outsourcing. Well, he's got a point there, and that's actually left wing rhetoric. They didn't factor that in. They didn't factor in his bashing of the Iraq War over and over and over in an area where Hillary's vulnerable. They didn't factor in. They don't know. I don't know. He's just he's far right. That's it. No, that's not it. Why don't you go into the details? They don't know. They're disconnected from the populist anger in the country. They don't know or don't care that wages have been stagnant since the 1980s. People are hurting. Their jobs have been outsourced because they're in their democratic elite bubble. So in their minds, they think Hillary Clinton is a wonderful candidate when you know how the rest of us think of her. So it just shows how disconnected they are. It shows how unserious they are. And it shows how they think they're nailing it the entire time they're coming up with these theories that are honestly comical. It's like they're making it up as they go along, and they think like, well, no, this is how it works. No, you don't know how it works. You don't know how it works. And if Hillary Clinton wins in the election, you better thank your lucky stars, because it certainly wasn't because of the genius of her campaign. I mean, she's up only 5 points on average against a monster. She should be up 20 points. So, if she ends up winning, it ain't because you nailed it. It's because he's that much worse, and people were able to recognize that. Okay. All right, let me take a final break. When we come back, Hillary Clinton reiterates her support for a no-fly zone and safe zones in Syria. I got to break that down for you. And we have Pat Robertson and Alex Jones in the show today. Oh, that's going to be fun. I cannot wait to discuss that. All right, don't go anywhere, guys. We'll be right back.
Oh.
Here we go. Hillary Clinton reiterated her call for a no-fly zone and safe zones in the Syrian civil war at the debate 2 nights ago. But we have a really damaging quote here from her leaked speech to Goldman Sachs about what she knows would happen in that situation. So if we do a no-fly zone and a safe zone, well, what would the results be? Let's listen to HRC from 2013. She says, Syria is getting more sophisticated thanks to Russian imports. To have a no-fly zone, you have to take out all of the air defense, many of which are located in populated areas. So our missiles, even if they are standoff missiles, so we're not putting our pilots at risk, you're going to kill a lot of Syrians. So all of a sudden, this intervention that people talk about so glibly becomes an American and NATO involvement where you take a lot of civilians. She's admitting that to do a no-fly zone in Syria, by its very nature, requires killing many Syrian civilians. Because to do the no-fly zones, you have to attack certain places that happen to be very civilian populated. Any decent journalist would take this information and immediately pelt her with questions. Hillary, you keep advocating for a no-fly zone and safe zones in Syria when you admitted in 2013 that will cause massive numbers of civilian casualties. Are you okay with massive numbers of civilian casualties? I mean, that's the most obvious question ever, right? It's unconscionable how ridiculous our foreign policy is and how they think they're nailing it. Like, the elites are convinced, like, oh, no, we got this shit on lock. You got it on lock? CIA armed militias are fighting Pentagon armed militias in Syria. We're arming both sides of a conflict, dipshits. No, that's cool. We got it unlocked. Anyway, let's send some more arms in there. Oh shit, our moderate rebels just gave the weapons to Al-Qaeda, which actually happened. Genius General Petraeus, fucking numbnuts over there, said, oh, I got an idea. Let's arm Al-Qaeda so that they fight ISIS. Because they're enemies with ISIS, and they'll fight the Assad regime, and we don't like them either. Yeah, so it's cool. Arm the people that attacked us on 9/11. I'm sure that won't come back later to bite us in the ass again, because originally it was Ronald Reagan who armed the Mujahideen to fight the Soviet Union, where they ended up fighting us with our own weapons. This just happens time and time and time and time and time again. And then putting all that aside, this... You do realize the massive escalation you're doing with Russia if you go in that direction. So if you decide to do safe zones and a no-fly zone in Syria, and a Russian plane happens to fly into your no-fly zone, what are you going to do? Are you going to shoot it down? Are you going to start World War III over Aleppo? Are you going to send young men and women from California and Nebraska to go die for Aleppo in World War III? It's like none of this is thought through. And Hillary Clinton said, during the debate. Like, oh, no, we need to do a no-fly zone and safe zones to get leverage over Russia. But that's escalation. That's not leverage. That's, okay, now let's play chicken, and I just drove, whatever, 100 yards closer to you. You're playing with the lives of millions of people, and you're just too arrogant to realize that. It's unbelievable, man. It really is. And then again, like, the concern over Syria, oh, we care so much about the civilians. That's what it's all about, the civilians who are being killed by big bad Assad and Russia. That's why we're so concerned. Saudi Arabia, we just armed them to the tune of billions of dollars. They used those weapons to attack a funeral 4 days ago where 140 people are killed, hundreds more are injured, women and children dead. Charred bodies, their pictures. They've attacked, Saudi Arabia has attacked potato chip factories, open air markets. They've attacked schools, hospitals. The list goes on and on, all with the weapons we gave them. Over 50% of the casualties in Yemen are civilians. They're not trying to hide it. The whole point is to kill civilians. We're like, what are you going to do? So what, I thought you cared about killing civilians. Oh, my God, Syria, the dead civilians. That's why we're so concerned. Okay, but the implication in Syria is what? I guess we have to do regime change. I guess we have to go in there and intervene and use guns. So that's your focus. Instead of all you would have to do in the case of Saudi Arabia, say, that's it, you're cut off. No more weapons. No more weapons, and we're going to sanction you. So to have a positive impact in Saudi Arabia, all you'd have to do is not even go in and topple the regime. Just say, we're not going to give you any more weapons. They're not doing that. They're even discussing it. But for Syria? Oh, well, civilian casualties. Oh, my God, civilian casualties. We care so much. Really? Why, so why don't you care about the civilian casualties in the Congo or Burundi or South Sudan? Why don't you care about the fact that northern Mali is Al-Qaeda-stan? You care about the civilian casualties at Boko Haram? You know, they seem like a problem. Syria is a vital region of the world, and they're allied with Russia, and they're allied with Iran, so this is really more about geopolitics and having control, so everybody shut the fuck up. Oh, civilian casualties. That's all you said. Syria, that's what we care about so much. It's so fucking transparent. And Hillary admitted in the debate, this really is about the chessboard, the Cold War chessboard. That's really what the most of what this is about. Otherwise, by the way, why would the U.S., and certainly under Hillary Clinton's plan, try to align with jihadist rebels? I mean, jihadists are the bad guys. We all agree with that, right? Well, no, let's align with them when they're geopolitically useful. And I haven't even mentioned that in order to do safe zones and a no-fly zone in Syria, what does it require? Tens of thousands of ground troops. As she says, oh, I'm not going to put any ground troops in there. Oh, no, I didn't put any ground troops in. All I said was we have a safe zone and we have a no-fly zone, and along with that, there happens to be ground troops, but I didn't intend to only put ground troops, so it's not a lie. So scummy and so disgusting. And she even admitted, this is going to kill massive numbers of civilians if we do a no-fly zone, if we do a safe zone. This was in the context of defending Obama, I believe, when he drew a red line against Assad and then he backed away from the red line. So she's out there defending him, saying, okay, come on, let's be serious. It would have caused a great number of civilian casualties if we try to do a no-fly zone and a safe zone. Well, now she's totally flipped on that. Don't mention the fact that as we pretend to care about civilian casualties, we would take more civilian casualties to do my preferred policy. That's what's happening. Okay. Speak of the devil, we got some Yemen stuff here. Story on Yemen. Last week, Saudi Arabia bombed Yemeni civilians again. Well, today we have some details for you. The Intercept reports. Aircraft from the Saudi-led coalition on Saturday bombed a community hall in Yemen's capital city where thousands of people had gathered for a funeral for the father of the rebel-appointed interior minister. The aircraft struck the hall four times, killing more than 140 people and wounding 525. One local health official describes the aftermath as, quote, a lake of blood. multiple bomb fragments at the scene appear to confirm the use of American-produced MK-82 guided bombs made by Raytheon. The U.S. has supplied Saudi Arabia with more than $20 billion worth of weapons during its Yemen campaign, including thousands of MK-82 bombs. Okay. I didn't know the number was that high. We just spoke recently about the $1.15 billion weapons deal for Saudi Arabia. I knew there was maybe one or two others at about the same cost. So I'm looking at $3, $4 billion roughly is what I thought we had given them since they started bombing Yemen. $20 billion. $20 billion. Anytime a politician brings up a program for the people, the immediate response is, how are we going to pay for it? How are we going to afford it? We can't afford that. I don't know what you're talking about. That's crazy. So when we're talking about health care, when we're talking about, you know, jobs programs, always, across the board, I don't know how we afford that. I don't know what you mean. We don't have fucking clean water in many places around the U.S. Everybody knows about the crisis going on in Flint. We're not putting resources towards that, but we gave $20 billion worth of weapons to one of the worst, if not the worst, regime on earth, and then watched them massacre civilians with it. There's no, like, you, it's hard to accurately describe just how ridiculous that is, because it sounds fake. It's so preposterous, it sounds like it's not real life. It is real life. Saudi Arabia, the people who say all atheists are terrorists. Saudi Arabia, the people who behead sorcerers and people who do witchcraft and people who drug smuggle, they behead them in the public square. We took that regime, who many have described as ISIS that made it, gave them $20 billion worth of weapons, sat back as they took out food plants in Yemen, schools for the blind, hospitals, open-air markets, you name it, funerals. And they're using illegal weapons under international law, too, that we provided them. Cluster bombs, illegal. White phosphorus, chemical weapons, illegal. $20 billion for that, you know, $100 billion to maintain our 800 military bases every year. That's a real number. And meanwhile, Flint, you don't have clean water? What are we going to do? I don't know. What are we going to do? I guess you have to live with it. Maybe we'll sprinkle a couple million and try to solve the problem. But we got $20 million for Saudi Arabia. It's so beyond ridiculous how much money goes to Wall Street. $80 billion subsidy every single year. $80 billion. Here, take it. Free money. Free money for the crooks. But, oh, you want to do universal health care? You want to do universal college? Fucking commie liberal idiot. Where are we going to get the money? Where are we going to get the money? Where are we going to get the money? Sure, we spent $100 billion on unnecessary military bases and $20 billion giving weapons to Saudi Arabia as they massacre people. $38 billion given to Israel so they can continue apartheid and illegal occupation. But where are we going to get the money? I don't know where we're going to get the money. I don't know what I'm talking about, bro. I don't know what I'm talking about. Where are we going to get the money? We can't afford that. We can't afford anything for you. We can afford everything for bombing people and killing people and being terrible people. Okay. All right, let's go to Pat Robertson. Donald Trump was caught on a hot mic from back in 2005, basically saying that he kisses women unprovoked and he grabs them by the pussy, so on and so forth. You guys have all heard the tape by now. Well, America's number one evangelist, Pat Robertson, with his show, The 500 Club. Pat's like 9,000 years old, but he still gets some viewers, and he goes up there, and they prop him up, and he's like, oh, yeah, let me tell you about moral values. So that's his whole shtick, and that's what he does. So when he heard about this Donald Trump tape, again, he's the family values guy, so you have to give credit where credit is due. He was really angry about Trump saying what he said. So let's watch him in all his fury.
Well, interesting, ladies and gentlemen, what happened, but Trump was the winner. Basically, the pundits were writing him off. I mean, let's face it. A guy does something 11 years ago. There's a conversation in Hollywood where he's trying to look like he's macho. And 11 years after that, they surface it from the Washington Post or whatever, bring it out within 30 days or so of the election, and this is supposed to be the death blow, and everybody writes him off, okay, he's dead, now you better get out of the way and let Mike Pence run the campaign. And Donald says no, but as I say, he's like the Phoenix. They think he's dead, he's come back, and he came back strong. So he won that debate. The next one, we'll see what happens. But in the meantime, he speaks to adoring thousands wherever he goes.
Well, Pat, calm down, man. Shit, he's angry, guys. You know, it really gets a man when you start, you know, violating good Christian family values, man. Jeez, Pat, relax. Unbelievable hypocrites. They really are. They really are. Does anybody believe for a second if Barack Obama did the exact same things that Donald Trump did, that they wouldn't immediately say, this is just disqualifies him? I mean, his character is so abysmal and disgusting and rotten and thuggish and wrong. That step down. You're an embarrassment, you're a joke, you're a bad person. You're a bad person for what you did. If Obama did it, just forget it. When their boy does it, oh, I don't know what you guys are talking about. He's got a lot of people at rallies, people like him, they thought this put him under, but it doesn't put him under at all. It's actually kind of macho. He's trying to sound macho on the tape. He says, from 11 years ago. That's a long time ago. Donald Trump was 59 years old when he made those comments. They say it like it's an argument. It was 11 years ago. It was only 59. I don't know about you guys, but when I was 59, I mean, shit. I couldn't stop doing blow off hookers' asses. I don't know about you guys. My wild days, my college days when I was 59. All right, okay, so. In the tape, understand, guys, Donald Trump said, I tried to fuck her. She was married. Now, he was also married at the time. A married man talking about trying to fuck another married woman. Again, this is Pat Robertson's bread and butter. Oh, I care about the family, and the family's really important, and you got to do moral values and be faithful and everything like that. And the guy's like, I'm doing the opposite, and I'm bragging about it. While I have a microphone on me. I don't have anything to say about that because I like the guy. And then naturally when he talks about, you know, I grab him by the pussy, do this, do that. Okay, I guess the only way, so here's how I'm going to be too kind to Pat Robertson. To be fair, I mean, this actually is quite tame compared to real biblical values. So Pat and all the evangelical Christians are crazy and wrong when they pretend like one man and one woman. Family values, got to stay faithful in your marriage. They say that that's Christian values, and they believe that that's Christian values. So they should be angry about Trump, and they're not angry about Trump. But if you actually go to the Bible, the stuff in there is wacky, son. So, for example, the number one form of marriage in the Bible is polygamy, of course. Of course. There's also examples of a guy chopping off his dick and balls, and living a life of celibacy. So, hashtag biblical values. And then there's the classic story of the daughters who get their father drunk and then rape him. So, according to actual shit in the Bible, Trump is tame as a motherfucker. But, even having said that, it is true that Pat Robertson, Ralph Reed, the rest of these losers who said, I still like Trump, I'm still with him, they say and they believe that it's all about, you gotta be good to your family. Got to be a good, faithful Christian man, be a virgin until you get married, and stay faithful, one man, one woman, cornerstone of society, and we stand by that unless our presidential candidate doesn't, in which case we go back on everything we ever said we believed. Okay. More. All right. Now I got to go to Alex Jones. and have some fun with this one. Alex Jones has some thoughts on the debate for us, and this is pretty much the best thing I've ever seen.
If something horrible comes out and Trump comes out and agrees he did it, I will then weigh it. But I'm never a lesser of two evils person, but with Hillary, there's not even the same universe. I mean, she is an abject, psychopathic demon from hell that as soon as she gets into power, she's going to try to destroy the planet. I'm sure of that. And people around her say she's so dark now and so evil and so possessed that they are having nightmares. They're freaking out. Folks, let me just tell you something. If the media wants to go with this, that's fine.
But
there are dozens of videos and photos of Obama having flies land on him indoors at all times of year, and he'll be next to 100 people and no one has flies on. Hillary, reportedly, I mean, I was told people around her that they think she's demon possessed, okay? I'm just going to go ahead and say it, okay? They said they're scared. That's why when I see her, when kids are by her, I actually get scared myself for the child. I mean, that big rubber face and that... I mean, this woman is dangerous, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you. She is a demon. This is biblical. She's going to launch a nuclear war. The Russians are scared of her. You want to be part of this delusion club, the delusionites, the delusional, where you think you're a winner and you think everything's okay because you said so. You're living in your own world. I know I'm right.
Oh, so great. The end was by far the best. You want to be delusional. You want to be a delusionite. All right, the delusionals. All right. You're living in your own world. I know I'm right. Dude, you just said she's, quote, a demon from hell. She is a demon. This is biblical. People around her think she's demon-possessed. When I was watching the debate, I saw the part where there was a fly that did land on her at one point. The second that happened, I went, motherfucker, I know all the idiot evangelical Christians are going to go on their shows and say, she's the devil. You saw fly land on her. I honestly didn't expect it to be Alex Jones, though. I expected it to be more like Rick Wiles and those people who are like overtly Christian hosts, like the End Times people. I didn't expect from him. Oh, no, he went there. You know, let me tell you something, people. Fly land on Obama. I've seen it with my own eyes. I have the documents. The documents are right here. Illuminati, Bilderberg, FEMA camps, black helicopters. What they're going to try to do is ban golf courses and ban cars, and they're going to try to shove you in hobbit homes. And they're coming. They're coming for you. They want to limit the population size, ladies and gentlemen. We got 7 billion people on the planet. They want to get it down to about just a couple hundred million to make sure that it's only the rich and only the elites. And everybody knows the elites are marrying horses. Everybody knows that. InfoWarsPrisonPlanet.com. Yeah, Alex, like the whole thing with Alex Jones, a lot of these conspiracies he's been saying since the 1990s, and they haven't happened. So when's it happening? Like, again, with Obama, the big thing was, oh my God, the FEMA camps. We have the videos, FEMA camps. He doesn't have much time left in office. When's he going to execute this plan, son? When is somebody going to take a pitchfork and, you know, poke me into a fucking FEMA camp? It's not going to happen because you're making it up. You're absolutely making it up. And, like, so if this is recent for Alex Jones, though. He used to just be conspiracy. Now, kind of like Glenn Beck, he's moved on to, like, part conspiracy, part fucking end times religious fundamentalist. Like, he's saying that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are literal demons. Like, how do you think this works? Do you not understand how arguments go? Like, first you would have to prove somehow, I don't know how you'd do it, but you'd have to demonstrate that demons are real and there is a heaven and a hell and your goofy religion is true. It's not. And then you'd have to go on to make your case, well, this person is a demon. Like, so here's a question. If a demon's a demon, the devil, we're talking about the devil, he brings up the devil in that as well. Like, why would the devil, if he's so smart and so tricky and so deceitful, why would he leave clues that he's doing shit? What's the gain in it for him? Like,
nobody can understand the depths of my evil, but I'll leave a hint by putting a fly on your forehead.
What? What? How does that make any sense? Why would he, there wouldn't be? And also, he's the devil. Like, this idea that,
here's how I work. I affect some world leaders by going inside of their body, and then I do bad things.
Okay, but you're the devil. Why can't you just, like, boom, tidal wave. Boom, destroyed fucking, I don't know, entire continent. Like, you're the devil. Why don't you just appear in the sky, make the entire sky red, and then your face comes out like a sci-fi movie, and you're like,
I am real. Now everybody has malaria and Ebola, and you're going to shit for 3 weeks straight.
Like, it's the devil we're talking about here. But it's like, no, what I'm going to do is, I'm going to be very sneaky about it. I'll drop some clues, little fly here and there. But I'm going to, you know, get involved in and try to affect certain elections, if you know what I'm saying. And why the U.S.? Like, think about it. So, is Alex Jones concerned about,
ladies and gentlemen, we know for sure that we have somebody in Argentina. We have the Secretary of the Treasury in Argentina, who apparently, ladies and gentlemen, is a demon. We know this person's a demon. I have the documents.
It's never, like, it's always so American-centric and narcissistic. And like, well, let's talk about what's going on right here. Why, what about fucking Russia? What about Burundi? Oh, and by the way, the thing on the nuclear weapons is hilarious. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm very concerned about Hillary Clinton escalating with Russia over Syria. So don't get it twisted. But he flips everything on its head. So he takes one of the main concerns about Donald Trump and then says that's the main concern about Hillary Clinton. Again, I am concerned about the standoff with Russia and escalating in Syria and stuff like that. But there were the reports of Donald Trump, you know, saying to top Republican advisors on national security, saying, okay, so we have nukes, right? Why can't we use them? They're like, whoa, Don, nuclear winter, you know, massive numbers of civilians there. He's like, right, but they exist. So we have them. We have them for a reason. Why don't we use them? Why can't we use them? We could use them, right? I mean, that's why we have them. So, like, just a genuine concern in the case of Trump, and also because he's massively thin-skinned and impulsive. Like, you don't want that guy with the nuclear codes, but he flips it on and says, now Hillary Clinton's going to do a nuclear war, destroy the planet. So take one of the biggest concerns about Trump and say, no, that's only Hillary, only Hillary. It's nonsense. Dude, you're... At what point did Alex Jones say, you know what, I'm not even going to try to make sense anymore? At what point did he say that? At what point did he say, I give up? Like, there used to be more, like, with me, man, look at this fucking bullshit. Look at all these fucking, all the fucking researching and reading I had to do for you motherfuckers every goddamn day of the week. I'm busting my ass reading a million articles and trying to, you know, fucking put them in order and present them to you and all that shit. At what point did Alex Jones say, you know what, fuck work. I'm just going to go out there and be like,
demons, the devil, Hillary, they got flies landing on the people. They got flies. We're dealing with the devil. Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com. Anyway, buy my supplements. I'm not a scam artist at all. Please. This will make your shit come out real nice. This will make you feel good. Get a nice little diet pill over here. Ladies and gentlemen, I've been taking the Super Male Vitality for all this time, and let me tell you, my libido's through the roof. That's really gross, isn't it?
Okay. All right, I'm almost out of time, but I'm going to squeeze in one more here because that's how I roll. We have a devastating story here coming out of India. The Independent explains for us. A teenage girl reportedly died after fasting for 10 weeks in an attempt to bring her family good luck. She carried out the fast after a priest told her parents she should do so to help her father recover business losses, according to the Times of India. Her family celebrated the end of her 68-day fast at their home, where she had reportedly survived on boiled water. She was later rushed to the hospital with dehydration. Doctors found she had suffered major damage to her intestines and kidneys, and she died from cardiac arrest 2 days after completing the fast. Okay, now, that's amazing. That's a 68-day fast. Jesus, that's so long, man. And get this, the religion that she's in and that her family is in is Jainism. Now, that's fascinating because Jainism is always pointed to as like the go-to benign religion where it's like, oh, the doctrines really matter, and the doctrine of Jainism is that you can never hurt a fly and you always have to be peaceful and this and that. So basically fundamentalist Jainism, no problems can come out of that because if you're a fundamentalist in that religion, you go by the doctrine, it's peaceful. So there can be no problems with that. Well, counterpoint, this happened. So, and this is something we've spoken about all the time, man. When it comes to fundamentalism, yes, there are differences in the various religious doctrines. Yes, that could lead, you know, one group much more likely to do violence than other groups. That's all true, for sure. It's also true, though, that any turning over of your mind to any religious doctrine, no matter how seemingly benign it is, there are downsides to it. Downsides like this, apparently, in Jainism, but also just the downside of rank tribalism and in-group, out-group mentality. And once you have that dynamic set up, man, it becomes so much easier to dehumanize the other and rationalize violence against the other. You know, even with Buddhism, there are different forms of Buddhism, admittedly, but, you know, the classic example is the Muslims in Myanmar, the Rohingya, who are unbelievably oppressed by the majority Buddhists in the country. Again, you talk to people, they might say, well, yeah, no, but Buddhism, the doctrine is all lovely and nice and this and that. Well, the doctrine of Jainism is all lovely and nice too. You could still find ways to fuck shit up, like with the giant fast, or it could just be run-of-the-mill tribalism, and we are Buddhists, therefore we are better than you, and now we're going to crack down on you, so on and so forth. So, yes, there's different degrees in how bad the problem is based on the doctrine, but anytime you turn over your mind to a religious ideology, it's dangerous by its nature. So, like a fundamentalism in various forms, it's dangerous by its very nature, and this is why we need to all embrace enlightenment values, and this is why we all need to really care about science and reason and rationality and try to move away from the doctrinaire approach to life that really was dominant in our past and still, unfortunately, very dominant today. But the future of the improvement of humanity is certainly not in fundamentalism. And this story breaks my heart because she didn't have to die. Because what the Jain monk said, and it's because what her family wanted her to do, it is the ideology that led to this happening, and otherwise it wouldn't have happened. Okay. All right, guys, I'm out of time. I love you. I will see you tomorrow. Mwah. I'm out. Peace.